As we entered into this chapter last week, we saw that the enemies of the Jews at this point were completely desperate. The walls were near completion. In fact, the walls were up and all that needed to be done was the doors needed to be hung, the gates needed to be put in place. But nothing had been successful in stopping these people from the task that was set before them. And so the enemy got together and they figured what they needed to do, and finally what they brought out was, we've got to do whatever we can. And so they entered into this in chapter 6, this great movement, and we call it Operation Strike the Shepherd. Operation Get to the Guy Who's on Top. And we see here that Nehemiah becomes the focus, he becomes the target of the enemy. And after all, if they can get to the leader, perhaps the rest would follow. And this really is a great strategy. Nothing new about it. It's been used so many times before. Because leaders are always become quick and easy targets. And once you take on that title or whatever position it is that you have in leadership, with it comes the reality that you have now become a target. And because of that, there are some who will reject ministry and leadership. There are some who will refuse to do it, because who wants to be a target? That's why you have to make sure you know what your calling is before you do what you do. But Nehemiah is really the leader of leaders as we've been going through our study, but we see the enemy here comes through and he gives these three different strategies in this chapter. Ways upon which he can get to Nehemiah, a way they can tear him down and strike him down. And the three areas that we talked about last week was compromise, slander, and then spiritual deception. Now last week we dealt with compromise. It was a great study. How they came and they offered Nehemiah, why don't you come and you meet us in the plain of Ono and Shepharim, and there we can bargain together or get together and have a discussion. What they were offering to Nehemiah is, Nehemiah, why don't you come and just meet us halfway? There we can meet together. Let's make a deal. Let's be friends. But really, as we saw in the passage, what they were doing was setting him up for the kill. And the warning was, beware when your enemies become your friends. Thank the Lord, Nehemiah stayed focused. And Nehemiah didn't give the enemy the time of day. You see, he was too busy doing the things that God had called him to do. And he kept his hand to the plow. He just continued on working. There is nothing that could dissuade him. Now, we, like Nehemiah, we need to have that kind of focus in our lives. We need not give the enemy the time of day when he's seeking to drag us off somewhere and get us into a discussion about how he can make our lives so much easier. And I wonder sometimes, and you have to ask yourself, how has the enemy diverted your attention? Has he offered you a deal to make life easier for you? And where have you negotiated? Where have you met halfway? Because just like with Nehemiah, if compromise is part of your life, trust me in this, as the word declares, you're being set up for the kill. Just as we see in the study. One of the books that I've really encouraged you to read so many times is the story of Christian in the book Pilgrim's Progress, because of the great analogies that John Bunyan brings out concerning this guy and his pilgrimage to the celestial city, which is heaven. But the journey, and how many diversions there are off the path. All the different distractions are the easy paths or the entertaining paths or the fascinating paths. All the things there are to get you off the path that you ought to be on. But one of the things you see in Nehemiah is that he stays in the path. And he leads his people the same way. And so now in verse 5 here, we look at Operation Strike the Shepherd, strategy number 2. Where he says, then Sanballat sent his servant to me in the same manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hand. Now remember, the enemies had come to Nehemiah 4 times offering him compromise. And Nehemiah said every single time he responded the same way, I don't have time, I've got work to do. Now comes the fifth time that they come, and every time they come here. But there's something I want you to see, and this is very important. And I look at this, I thought, you know, this, I think every believer needs to see this. Nehemiah was very aware of the enemy, but the enemy never became his focus. This is really important. He wasn't a demon chaser, he was a worker. He focused on the work that God had given him to do. You see, there are some who get so preoccupied looking for the devil everywhere that they never get anything done. That's why we should be aware of the enemy and his tactics, but if he succeeds in gaining our focus, then he has us exactly where he wants us, and that is distracted from the work that he wants us to do and the things he wants us to do. Not busy with the important things. But here comes the fifth approach that they come to Nehemiah. Things were heating up. The intensity was great. And Nehemiah wasn't playing their game. There's no politics here. This guy is so focused that he now becomes the enemy's focus, the target of everything they have. This time they come and they have an open letter in their hand. What does open mean other than the fact that this is something that is meant for everyone to read? It's a report that is given, and its intent is to get Nehemiah's attention. We are serious now. We have this letter, and it's written, and everyone can see it and read it. And verse 6, he says, "In it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Gashmu says that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, you are rebuilding the wall, and you are to be their king according to these reports. You've also appointed prophets to proclaim in Jerusalem concerning you, a king is in Judah. And now it will be reported to the king according to these reports. So come now, let us counsel together." Here it is. The report is there. The Jerusalem Inquirer. The story you always wanted to know. The reports are in. We heard this thing. It's reported. Someone said, or I don't know if it's true, but we've heard this, and it's kind of come out, and someone has told us that you're kind of up to this thing. And they level these specific accusations against Nehemiah. They level accusations of rebellion. You intend to incite a rebellion among the Jews and against Persia. Nehemiah was the leader of this great rebellion and the charge that they laid out before him. He's also charged with pride, of trying to establish his own kingdom, of setting himself up as king for his own kingdom. Kind of humorous, really, when you look at this. If Nehemiah had proven anything, even in this short time as we've gone through our study, he has proven he is so much of a servant. If all the things that he does as a leader, he's not in it for his own gain. If everything that we see here, but they would come and level that charge against him. Nehemiah, you're into it for yourself. This is all about you. Then they accuse him of treachery, of Nehemiah being accused of breaking faith with the king who had sent him on this mission, accused of abusing his God-given authority over these people and setting up things for his own purpose, therefore thwarting the authority of the king. Rebellion, pride, and treachery. And I wonder how it must have hurt Nehemiah to hear these reports. Such twisting of facts, to be so clearly misrepresented, to have your character assassinated in just a few words and an open letter for everyone to read and to hear the things that are being said about you. And I thought of Nehemiah and I thought, wow, he was really in good company. It happened to David. How Saul made accusations of rebellion, pride, and treachery in him. It was said of Jesus. Rebellion, pride, and treachery. It was said of the Apostle Paul. He was not the first, nor was he the last to have those kinds of charges leveled against him. Slander. Here you find the enemy using these charges and these accusations of wrongdoing. And it's been going on for a long time what the slander is. And how a slander is defined is the utterance of false charges or misrepresentations which defame or damage another's reputation. There's a Hebrew proverb that says, slander slays three persons. The speaker, the spoken to, and the spoken of. And this open letter was sent to defame Nehemiah before the people as a threat to him, as it says, "And now it is reported to the king according to these things." These accusations that were being leveled against Nehemiah carried with them serious implications. These guys at this point are playing serious hardball with Nehemiah. And though there is no evidence for the accusations, should the king of Persia get the report from this inquirer that he sent his way, and should he take it to heart, then all the plans of these Jews in rebuilding comes to nothing. Reprisal would be immediate and swift. If these accusations were written here to stir up fear among the people and to provoke the people to apply pressure to Nehemiah, Nehemiah, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Maybe, Nehemiah, you ought to go and you ought to just sit down with Sanballat and just hear what he has to say. After all, Nehemiah, I mean, things are getting really hairy here and we realize we're just about done, but this is not good. All this good work that we've done so far is going to come to an end. And so, you know, listen, these open letters are always written to cause as much damage as possible. And how hard it is to undo the damage done by a bad report, even if it isn't true. Did you know that? Notice here that the letter was used as a bargaining chip. Sanballat was using it to get Nehemiah to negotiate. He says, so come now, let us counsel together. Well, why would I do that? What is interesting here is because these accusations, if they are true, then Sanballat is guilty of consorting with the enemy. Therefore, giving his own motivations away by why he writes. They wanted Nehemiah bad. I can only think as they watched the resolve of this man, they got more and more angry. They were furious with him. I mean, let's get together, Nehemiah, so we can kill you and have done with it. Now you wonder, okay, once again, how is this relative to me? It's a great story. I think it's relative because we live in a culture that is driven with the cravings of slander and gossip. And the enemy is so alive in this area. When you think of gossip, gossip is a rumor or report of intimate nature. It's chatty talk. When you think of a gossip, you think of a person who goes out and spreads these kinds of rumors and reports. Someone defined gossip as news you have to hurry to tell somebody else before you find out it isn't true. Proverbs 11:13 describes a gossip as a person who betrays confidence. The gossip is one who gravitates within his own heart to bring dissension among others and accusations and build suspicion. Because just the report alone does that, doesn't it? Is it really true? I've heard it. Oh, it couldn't be. But then there comes the other accusation, Jeremiah, well, perhaps it is true, and you don't know whether it's true. Proverbs 26:22 says, the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to a man's inmost parts. You see, the gossip, he leads suspicion and division between people. And I have learned and discovered over my years and being in the church that slander and gossip are sins of choice in most churches. I mean, I grew up in a church that forbid and would not tolerate smoking, drinking, dancing, and true, and hanging around anyone that do. They wouldn't even allow bowling. They wouldn't allow movies, or they wouldn't, I mean, they had the list of things that you couldn't do if you're going to be a part of this church. But my, how they would put up with gossip and slander. And of course, my father was the pastor. So our family, we got filled with it. That was my feelings about church. The sin of choice. What's interesting is that in 2 Timothy, and Paul in that chapter is warning Timothy about the last days and the difficult days that were ahead of them. Whole list of people that are lovers of self and pleasure. But one of the great indicators that he gives that people will be gossip mongers and slanderers. And I think when you look at this, no one could really deny the fact that we're living in those difficult days. All you have to do to prove my point is to go down to the local grocery store and just look at the stand on your way out. You know, because you look at them too. See all the little stories that are written there? Everybody wants to know who's doing what to who and what's happening to who and why. And our culture is just thick with it. But how sad when it becomes a part of the church. Always stirring up trouble. Proverbs 16:28 says that a perverse man stirs up dissension and a gossip separates close friends. Proverbs 26:20 says that without wood a fire goes out and without gossip a quarrel dies down. Proverbs 10:18, he who conceals his hatred has lying lips and whoever spreads slander is a fool. I think of the early church. And Paul, dealing with the Ephesians, he said, get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. He spoke to Titus and he said, remind the people to be subject to the rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready to do whatever is good, to slander no one, to be peaceable and considerate, and to show true humility toward all men. James would write, brothers, do not slander one another. And Peter would say, therefore, rid yourselves of all malice and deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. There is no doubt about it. The Bible, recognizing the problem of what is here, it is called sin. And it's a problem. It's in its aim and its intent and its product, hurt and divide and great damage is done. And the body of Christ has to be so aware of this and the devil's schemes because the gossiping tongues becomes a great tool in his hand to do exactly what it did and was seeking to be done in Nehemiah's case. Kind of an interesting thing is that the devil, his name is Diabolus. He is called the accuser, the accuser, the slanderer, the false accuser. Revelation 12:10 calls him the accuser of the brethren. He says that he accuses us before the Father day and night, which he is there. He's telling the stuff you do and the stuff you don't do. Listen, the stuff you do is bad enough. And he accuses, and I'm certain of this, he accuses us before each other. I mean, he accuses me before you. I don't know how many or who or what, but I'm sure it happens. And he accuses you before me. Did you know? I heard. Did you hear about Pastor Doug? Did you know that he ties his kids up by their thumbs every night? Boy, he's one guy at church, but he's somebody completely different at home, I'll tell you. And the enemy, he knows how effective slander is for bringing down churches and leaders, the works that he wants to do. Satan is such a liar. In John 8, he was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. He speaks a lie. He speaks his own from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. I think NIV says that he is, when he speaks lies, he is speaking his native language. It's what he does. He lies. And the whole purpose and the whole gain and is to get us to do the very thing that happened with Nehemiah, to get us to stop building and working in the kingdom. But how tragic when we become the tools of his ranting, when we become his mouthpiece, when we're ready to listen and spread. Listen, I have no agenda here. This is just what's in the passage. But how relevant it is for all churches and for us. And he sends us open letter and all too often we become the ones who are the messengers of letter. And all too often, there are so many that are ready to listen and hear what is going on. I had a friend of mine this week who's a pastor in one of the communities nearby. And he just told me about how this one guy in this community just can't stand him. And that this past week he actually sent out flyers in the community, mailers. Went through the expense of doing mailers to send in the community to defame his character before the people. Wow. You know, so our part too often, and the problem is also that sometimes we give the enemy a lot of ammo to work with. That's the other part of that. But he's quick to tell everyone about what's going on with you. And he's quick to expose your weaknesses and your faults. And he's quick to tell lies about us. And just like Nehemiah, the reason is to keep us from building. I've had my share of letters. Janet has had her share of letters. I'm sure they won't be the last. And I wish I could tell you with all my heart that they didn't hurt when you get them. I wish I could tell you that they didn't fill you with a lot of pain to feel so wrongly accused of things and to know that it's wrong. I've had my accusations of trying to build my own kingdom. And it hurts when you're lied about. And what you want to do is defend yourself. And you want to fight back. You just want to regain your reputation. You want to do everything you can. And you want in the flesh so badly just to retaliate. To somehow get even, well, I'll get even with you, man. You say that about me. See, I have such an evil heart. I can think of so many... I'm so glad that I know the Lord because my flesh, when it goes a certain direction, ouch. I think of the things I could say and the cutting things I could say. And then the Lord just, oh, that's not your path, Lord. That's not what you want. And if you're not careful, what you end up doing is doing exactly what the enemy wants you to do. It's to get you diverted so that he can get you away from the things that you ought to be doing. And that's why you look at this passage here and you see what is going on in verse 8 and Nehemiah's response and how he deals with this. You've got to look at this and glean from this. In verse 8 he says, "Then I sent a message to him saying, such things as you are saying have not been done, but you are inventing them in your mind. For all of them are trying to fight and frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged with the work and it will not be done. But now, O God," he said, "strengthen my hands." The first thing you see here that Nehemiah did in his response in this issue is that he knew the truth and he stood on it. In other words, he measured out the things that were said and he said, "You know, what you're saying, this isn't true." And I want you to take note here of who he goes to. He goes back to the people who sent the message to him and he says, "The things that you have invented in your minds, these things are not true. They're a fabrication of your own mind. Truth is a marvelous thing. Sometimes it's all you've got is the truth." And usually when attack is leveled at me, I have to sit there and say, "Well, is it true?" And sometimes some of it is true. But truth has a marvelous way of working its way out. Because once you've solved it in your own heart, you can leave the truth with God. He knew the truth and he stood upon the truth. And he knew it about himself. And in time, the truth would come out. One of the things that I've often told and told my wife and others in leadership, and I've always seen it to be true, that in time, the truth usually ends up coming out. Over the years, one of the blessings that I've had with so many of the people that have given me the letters is that later on they came back. Years after they left here and were disgruntled, but they came back and told me that they were wrong. Time has a way of working things out if you're just patient enough. Time is a great revealer of truth. Might be hard and difficult and be embarrassing to go through, but the truth is one of the things that you stand with. Nehemiah's character stood for itself. He had spent a lifetime building it. Do you know that Nehemiah was where he was, and the reason he was there is because the king trusted him to go? Because God had worked in this man, and when the king was sending him, he trusted him. Why? Because he had already proven his character to the king. But there was something else that Nehemiah knew, and this is the most important yet, that Nehemiah knew that he was where he was, doing what he was doing, because God sent him there. And as long as he knew that, he could keep on going. You can rest in the truth. Not only was he certain of the truth, but secondly here, I want you to see that he was aware of their motivations. They were the enemy. What more should he expect from them? They had been against him from the time they started. Now they'd come and they wanted to bring discouragement to the people so that the work will not get done. He saw what their motive was. He knew exactly what they were out for. It wasn't him. They wanted the work stopped. And he was the way to get it done. Bottom line, the purpose was to stop the building. Nehemiah here, you see here, he expected opposition. Every leader gets it, and every leader ought to expect it. It's going to come your way. It comes our way in our church. It'll come our way, and it'll come your way in your life. Wherever you're leading, it'll come your way. He didn't panic. He didn't cry, and he didn't fight, and he didn't swear. He just stays focused. But I love what you see here, and the third thing he did is this. He got back to work. Isn't that great? He says, "But now, O God, strengthen my hands. Oh, let me get back to work." Yeah, I hear what he says, and I hear what they're doing. And Nehemiah here, he commits the matter to the Lord. This was God's business. The Lord sent him there, and only the Lord should be the one to stop him. And it was the Lord's business to decide, not in fear of man. He had to rest in the Lord's vindication. Oh God, strengthen my hands. Not the hands of him or her over here, but God, strengthen my hands for the work that you've given me to do. This is one of the greatest examples I have found in the study of David and why I love him so much. He's one of my heroes in the Bible. If I think of the 14 years that Saul was accusing him and chasing after him and accusing of all these things of treachery and of seeking his setting up his own throne and accusing him of rebellion, not once did David seek to fight Saul or take matters into his own hands. Oh, I'm sure the thought occurred in his mind. And twice Saul was delivered into his hands that he could take his life, but Saul said, "Why should I do this against the Lord's anointed? God is the one who's my defender." You gotta love that. Let the people say what they want, but it's what God thinks. And in Psalm 54, verse 1 through 4, David cries, "Save me, O God, by your name, and vindicate me by your power. Hear my prayer, O God, give ear to the words of my mouth, for strangers have risen against me, and violent men have sought my life. They have not set God before them, Selah. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the sustainer of my soul." That's awesome. David left his reputation in the hands of the Lord, and what you see here with Nehemiah is he does the very same thing. "Lord, the reputation of mine is yours." And he got back to work. How do you win against a guy like this? Nothing stops him. He's like the ever-ready battery. He just keeps going and going and going and going. No one could deny the awful pain of being wrongly accused or having your motivations attacked. And I have had times in my own ministry where I wanted to quit and I wanted to run because the pain felt so severe. But there's always one thing that keeps me going. It's God's business what I do. It was God who placed me here, and it was God who'll take me out. It's God's business to deal with those who wrongly accuse. Oh, there's nothing going on. That's in your heart. The Lord's teaching you things here, though. What do you do about gossip and slander? Well, the very first thing you do is you refuse to be a party to it. In two areas do you accomplish that. First of all, you refuse to speak it. A.B. Simpson said this. He said, "I would rather play with forked lightning or take in my hands living wires with their fiery currents and speak a reckless word against any servant of Christ, or idly repeat the slanderous darts which thousands of Christians are hurling at each other to the hurt of their own souls and bodies. I realize it's something that we wrestle with. Some years back, the Lord was placed in my heart to write these little articles on gossip and stuff, the sin of gossip, and some of you have read them. We keep them out in the lobby. What's so funny about that is we're always refilling the thing. And I love that. It means you're reading them. And perhaps maybe you're passing on to someone else as you see something going on. I don't know what's going on, but we know that it's a problem and something that we struggle with. But beware what you share and how you use your tongue, even if what you say is true. Never tell an evil of a man if you don't know it for certainty. And if you do know for certainty, then you have to ask yourself, then why should I tell it? What would the purpose be? Question your motivations behind what your words are. Are they being used to build, or are they being used to destroy it? And what do they affect? What good are they going to work in others' lives? Think before you speak, in that order. Fear the Lord. St. Augustine, I love this, he said he encouraged conversation at meals, but he strictly enforced a rule that the character of an absent person should never be negatively discussed. And he had placed a plaque at each table with that rule. Isn't that great? The damage that the tongue can do. James said that the tongue is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. It has great potential, like that of a spark will get your whole forest fire going. It's like a rudder on a ship, though it is so small it can direct the whole course of a huge ship. Alan Redpath said that the worst enemy of Christian people is the last member of the human body to be consecrated. This thing in our mouth, which one moment speaks love and the next moment venom. Psalm 15. Lord, who may dwell in your sanctuary? Who may live on your holy hill? He whose walk is blameless, and who does what is righteous, who speaks the truth from his heart and has no slander in his tongue, and who does his neighbor no wrong and casts no slur in his fellow man. Be careful what you speak. Secondly, in taking ownership in this whole thing and seeing what you can do, is you be careful what you listen to. Not only what you say, but what you feed yourself. If anybody took slander in and they gave it lodging, then you expect it to live. But if you take slander in and you give it no lodging and no food, then it will die of starvation. Be careful. Proverbs 20:19 says, he who goes about as a slanderer reveals secrets. Therefore, he says, do not even associate with such a one. A gossip is a person who is to be avoided. And gossip is to be avoided. In other words, don't even listen. Don't even entertain yourself with thoughts. And when you're going through the magazine's rack at the way out of the store, look another direction. Encourage one another to holiness. Don't take everything at face value. It was really funny. Gail Irwin was here some months back, and I met Gail, I think it was at the airport, and I said, Gail, I heard you're going to be the assistant pastor for Chuck down at Costa Mesa. He says, really? Oh, man, the stuff that we hear, and it just flies around. Slander is answered best with silence. And lastly, I want you to consider this. Be committed to handling sensitive situations God's way. And not being a gossip or a slanderer doesn't mean that you put your head in the sand. And that at times you don't see things that are wrong. And things, the actions of someone else that perhaps cause great offense to you. Sometimes there's things you have to deal with. And the scriptures really give a lot of indication as to the way to deal with this. The Bible says that agape love seeks not evil. It never assumes worse than desires, but the best of each other. The very first thing that you ought to do if there's a situation that you see is go and try doing this. Try talking to the person themselves. What a concept. You discover that sometimes there's facts and things that you don't know that perhaps you need to know to understand the situation more completely. And sometimes you might talk to a person and say, you see what they're doing, and it might even be gossip that you're confronting them about. And so dealing with it, then what they do is they say, you're right, I need to stop. Therefore, you've become a friend. The next thing that Matthew 18 brings out, a beautiful, as he brings out the way to deal with these things, he says, then if it doesn't work, and that thing still continues to go on, and it's still a wrong that is done, then you go with somebody else. Not everybody else, but somebody else. And you, again, try to reason with that person that they might turn away from what it is that is going on. And the very last thing it says that you do as a church in these situations when there's something that is going on in someone's life that needs the discussion is, the very last thing is you have to make a public statement of it. Ouch. But in this, you see the accountability of people watching over each other, not mothering each other, but exhorting each other to holiness. Titus 3:10 says that warn a divisive person once, and then after, warn him a second time, but after that, have nothing to do with him. And what you discover is that the tongue and the gossip, the slanderer, really becomes the wrecking ball of great fellowship. What I see here in Nehemiah is that Nehemiah knew the truth, and he stood on it. He looked at the motivations behind what was causing these others to do what they were doing for what they were. And he committed the matter to the Lord and got busy with his work. May God work in all of us to be a kind of people who are so busy with the things that he's caused us to do that we just keep on going and going and going. Trucking along, busy with the Father's business. Isn't that awesome? What an awesome thing it is to see the body of Christ functioning and living and loving the way that He's called us to love each other. Love is the rule, people. Always the rule. Always the first thing, love. Let's pray.